A reading from the first letter of Peter. Beloved, sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. Always be ready to give an explanation to anyone who asks you for a reason for your hope. But do it with gentleness and reverence, keeping your conscience clear, so that when you are maligned, those who defame your good conduct in Christ may themselves be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that is the will of God, than for doing evil. I want you to watch her for a bit as she scurries down a stone path. You can close your eyes if it helps you to see more clearly. It's very dark as the sun has set now, and the moon is but a slender scythe in the sky. She stumbles a bit when the lip of her sandal catches an unevenness between two slabs. She reaches out in both directions to steady herself, and her palms get wet as they slide across patches of green slime clinging to the humid walls. Someday her city will be called Bafra, and tourists will come and see its beaches for a day or two after their bus stops at Hagia Sophia and Istanbul, but that's many years from now, and centuries too distant to imagine. What's important right now is getting home before her husband returns from his dinner banquet and finds her late again. It's not like she doesn't know where she's been. It's Saturday night. They have an unspoken understanding. She is Christian. He doesn't want to hear about it. He's tried everything else, and it doesn't work. Tried asking her not to go. Tried telling her not to go. Tried ordering her not to go. It's easier just to pretend she doesn't. Tonight's Eucharist went a little longer than usual. There was a letter from Rome circulating among the churches of Pontus and Bithia and Galatia. The significance of such a weighty correspondence meant that it had to be read with great care and discussed with greater care. It was a word of encouragement from Peter's community, those who knew something about what it's like to live under persecution, knew what it was like to be constantly under suspicion, constantly on guard. You don't have to go looking for fights like the zealots do, the letter had said. No need to rock the boat unnecessarily. Fit in where you can. Astound people by your goodness. But when asked, when pressed, be ready. Be ready to give an explanation of the hope that keeps you going. Be ready to give a reason for why you do what you do and why you live how you live. She slips around the corner now. She's almost home, 20 feet from the door. She's moving too quickly and doesn't see her husband move out from the shadows and take her wrist. And she's surprised by the strength with which he twists it to pull her back face to face with him. Honestly, have you no shame? The only women out at this hour are prostitutes and revolutionaries. Do you not care what you are doing to me, to the family? Why? Why do you insist on shaming us in this way? Watch as her mind races and her stomach descends to its resting place beneath her heart. Watch as she straightens herself to full height and observe how grace seems to swirl like fog within her mouth half open, forming words that emerge from her lips that are clear and compelling, and lean in and listen carefully to what she has to say. Now turn around and give your eyes a moment to adjust. The sunlight is so bright outside that against your will you find yourself squinting, and you wish you weren't because there's a scene emerging rapidly in front of you, and it's important that you see. A young man is riding his bike toward the Jesuit house in Homs, swerving to avoid potholes. He's been going there at least once every couple days since its sole resident, Father Franz van der Loot, was killed on April 7th. Father Franz was much older, 75 in fact, but he encountered him as a friend, one of the few missionaries who remained after an increasing number of foreign jihadists began to populate the town in late 2012. And for a moment earlier this spring, the two had shared a taste of hope. 13 nuns who had been kidnapped from their monastery in Maula in December had been released on March 10th. They wondered whether there might be a tide in Syria, a turning of that tide, whether the civil war that had claimed the lives of 150,000 might be showing signs of dissipating. Would the thousands and thousands of Christian refugees who had fled the country begin to feel safe enough to come home? Now, that rush of optimism was extinguished with Father Franz's death. two bullets to the brain, but not the hope. Hope is not the same thing as optimism, you know. We say that we hope in a particular outcome, like the end of a war, a return to better times, safety, peace. But even when those things don't happen, hope remains. Hope is that peculiar strength that keeps one willing the good, even when the good seems unattainable. Hope is like oxygen. It's the capacity to breathe in the possible and not only the actual. And this young man on the bike, he has it in spades. He continues to grow up to take care of this property even after the attack. He's remained in homes when many of his relatives have left. He's one of the few Christians still in the town. And now as he rides, you can see there's a roadblock set up just 100 feet ahead. A small cadre of equally young men with guns are telling him to get off his bike. And you know that in other local towns just north of here, Christians have been forced to convert to Islam or pay a protection tax or be killed. And you draw closer as they pester him with questions. Where is he going? Why hasn't he left? What's his hope in staying here? If you aren't close enough to hear what he's about to say, scooch in a bit, because there's grace that's stirring here as well. And listen, listen to his response. I hope you're able to hear okay because you're up next. And don't be afraid, because chances are there's no guns pointed at your head and no threats issued. But that doesn't mean it's easy, does it? And I bet that you too can name a place, a moment, where you're asked to give an accounting for your hope. Maybe it's a classroom filled with dubious adolescents forced by parents to sit through confirmation classes they don't really want to attend, ready to test your every statement and point out why faith is old-fashioned and out of date. Or maybe it's a news reporter who wants a 30-second soundbite for a story, including contrasting points of view on the relevance of faith in the 21st century. Or it's an elderly parishioner, not long for this world, who's visiting every doubt and regret of the past 85 years as he stares ahead into what appears a dark hole. For me, it was last January in the front of my car after a 20-hour road trip with my 18-year-old son, when at hour 19, he suddenly turned to me and said, "Mom, you're just going to have to explain the whole Jesus thing to me. I can tell it's important to you, but I don't get it." Take a moment to paint that scene in your mind and ready yourself. How will you describe your greatest hope? How, with gentleness and reverence, will you articulate what you believe? Why do you do what you do? And what are the words that you're feeling rise up within you, the most truthful thing that you could say? If you think I'm going to give you those words, you're wrong. Because words given to us by others are never so powerful as the hard-won words we pluck ourselves from the unique fire of our lives. And besides, I'm still struggling to find them myself. But I do know two things. That one, by baptism, each of us is obligated to find them. The Epistle of Peter is not speaking here just to the episcopoi or the diaconoi or the presbyteroi, though you can expect they're included here. Peter is speaking to each and every member of the Christian community. Each and every one of us needs to be able to give an explanation for our hope. And two, while we deeply struggle to find our own words, it helps to put ourselves in stance of deep listening to the testimony of others, especially those who are on the margins of history, the edge of our awareness. Throughout our tradition, it seems grace has swirled and continues to swirl most freely among the poor and among the persecuted, and we'll get the best clues for our response by paying attention to people in these scenarios and hearing what they have to say, even when it's uncomfortable to draw that close to their struggles, and indeed downright scary to accompany them into their dark spaces. But it's in concert with these preaching voices of others that we witness the witness we offer to the world with gentleness and reverence might illumine the hope that animates our lives, whether then or now, here or there, one hope with 10,000 reasons.